Good evening and welcome. You're watching The Big Fight, a show that is young at 22, the oldest running debate show on Indian news television. I'm Sanket Upadhyay. There is a big fight. No, we are not supposed to fight with one another. There is a big fight that this country has, the world actually has, against a new variant called Omicron. Conflicting studies on whether this is more transmissible, whether this is going to infect people more, will cause more hospitalization or not. Some people say that no, that won't happen. There's positive signs from South Africa. Others say the sheer number of people who will be infected will mean that there will be a massive, massive load on the healthcare infrastructure of cities in India and countries like India. So the big question on the big fight tonight, can India win the big fight against Omicron? We have barely recovered from the second wave or the Delta variant. And now comes Omicron, staring at us in our face. What has our response been? We are saying, let's put night curfew, let's do this, let's do that. Are these the correct efforts or are they piecemeal efforts? Will they work or will this be seen as yet another knee-jerk reaction? This is going to be our big discussion on The Big Fight tonight. I would like to welcome our guests, first set of guests, Dr. Subramaniam Swaminathan, Director, Infectious Diseases and Infection Control at the Gleneagles Global Group. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Swaminathan. We have Dr. Lancelot Pinto, Consultant, Pulmonologist and Epidemiologist at the Hinduja Hospital. Dr. Naresh Trehan, Chairman and Managing Director of Medanta, the MediCity. And Dr. Ashok Seth, Chairman of Fortis Escorts Heart Institute. Thank you very much. Let me first begin by asking you, Dr. Trehan, in your understanding of this new variant, there are some studies that suggest that this is not as harmful as Delta. And then there are other studies that say that you can't conclusively prove that it is less harmful. Where do we stand as far as knowledge on this variant is concerned?
So, Sanket, it's very clear that there is still paucity of data to be able to make any major conclusion. The basic facts that are coming out so far is that the R0 factor of this variant is 3 to 4 times that of the Delta. And you know what Delta did to our country. I mean, we went up to 400,000 cases a day. If this is more transmissible, and the sheer number of people who get infected can overwhelm any system. The other part which is known as, so far we are believing, and some of it is encouraging and optimistic, is the fact that maybe the number of people getting infected may be large, but the number of people requiring hospitalization and ICUs may be much smaller than the Delta wave. Now, but it's very early stage for us to say that that's what's going to happen in India. This virus can change while in the middle of a wave. So we really don't know the real character, what will happen in our country. So only thing that you can do is to really, what the whole thing is about, is that big fight against the virus. Yes, there are many ways we can do it. We must get on the ground right now because it is early stage, and any action that we take today is going to help us to prevent that massive wave which may come our way, which will actually be devastating. We have barely recovered from the second wave, and the human misery and the economic burden will be too huge. So it's obvious what we can do. There are three parts to it: the government, the healthcare providers and the frontline workers, and the public at large. The most important part is public at large. Government can make regulations. Government is doing it already, which is good. The advisories are going out. I may say that they should be made maybe even more stringent in areas where we are finding it spreading, because no point taking these measures when it has spread far and wide. This is the time to do what we have to do. But insist on the public, one, vaccination, two, practicing diligently and maybe legally enforced that they must wear masks, the gathering should be stopped, And basically markets should be not crowded. They should be given advisory or whatever. We had the mechanisms to control the number of people in a market. And we should do that again. Because this is imminently more transmissible than what we saw in the Delta wave. And it could then turn to be deadly also.
Sure. Absolutely. And that is the big fear. Dr. Pinto, then do you feel that the response of governments seems to even now be knee-jerk? For instance, what is the scientific study to back a decision like a night curfew? How is that going to prevent the spread of the virus? A night curfew.
Hi, Sanket. Thank you for inviting me on the show. And I think the point that you raise is a valid one. I think we need to learn from what we've done in the past, what has worked, what hasn't worked. I think the biggest thing that we really need to do is what we tried to do during the first wave, this whole concept of flattening the curve. We don't want all the infections to happen at one shot. I think given the transmissibility that we are seeing with Omicron across the world, it is almost certain that a significant proportion of the population will get infected at some point of time. And I think what we really want to therefore do is make sure that everybody doesn't get infected together, because if that does happen, then even if a small fraction of those individuals need hospitalization, there is a potential that our healthcare system will get overwhelmed. So when it comes to measures, I think, you know, the three C's that we've said over and over and over again throughout the pandemic in terms of closed spaces, closed distances, and overcrowding, I think these are the first principles that we still need to adhere to, you know, make sure that masks are in place. The night curfew, I haven't understood it completely, but I think it's also it comes from the presumption that monitoring behavior at night is extremely difficult, whether it comes to policing, whether it comes to individuals who can actually see what's happening at night. I think that's my understanding why this concept of a night curfew comes.
The virus is going to spread more in the day.
No, I agree with you. I'm just trying to figure out what the rationale is, but maybe that's one of the rationales. But, you know, I think the most important thing is to prevent overcrowding, prevent these potential super spreader events, and which tend to very often happen indoors more than outdoors. And I think we should learn from what, potential mistakes we've made in the first and the second wave.
Absolutely. Dr. Seth is now also with us. But Dr. Swaminathan, I want to come to you now and address the very, very important issue of booster shots. Even now we see that despite the recommendations by a lot of doctors, there is still no clarity on whether the government will go for booster doses or not. It is still conducting a feasibility study. Then there will be reports. I know these things have to be done scientifically. There will be a report, and then the report will be studied, and then a decision will be taken, then the process will be rolled out. If the virus is three times more transmissible, should our speed of action not also be three times?
I'm really worried that you are actually putting together things which are in effect unrelated. Mm-hmm. What has become very obvious is getting the vaccine is not going to give you very good protection against the infection or transmission. For Omicron, that's fairly clear. So therefore, if you are going to use the vaccine or the booster for that matter as a means to stop progression, that's not going to work. Let me tell you a few numbers. One, data from the UK, the Imperial College put out a very beautiful document yesterday. I don't know how many people have had a chance to look at it very carefully. What has been shown is that people who had two doses of the vaccine are actually in good shape in terms of severity of illness. Second, although people who had passed COVID are equally likely to get COVID, maybe slightly higher than other people, than to get Omicron, severity is significantly less. So natural immunity in terms of preventing severe disease does seem to have some value. Hybrid immunity from the looks of it does seem to have value. So most of our people who got the vaccine two doses have all got it after getting the infection. And remember, 70% of India got the vaccine after getting the infection. My biggest concern is about healthcare workers. Why? Because the majority of healthcare workers got the vaccine before Delta hit us, and therefore they may not have had hybrid immunity, number one. Number two, they got the vaccine far ahead of everybody else and therefore waning of immunity. And let's look at the data from Scotland and Brazil. In 4 to 5 months' time, two doses of Covishield, or the AstraZeneca vaccine, there is significant waning of protection against severe disease. That's number two. Number three, this is important. If you look at what's happening with NHS in London, absenteeism of healthcare workers in the height of the COVID pandemic right now with Omicron is zooming because of COVID-related issues. If we don't protect your healthcare workers now, you're going to find a lot of people missing during the surge because they are fall sick, right? So I think the time has come for us to stop debating and get the jab into healthcare workers immediately.
That's a very important point. Dr. Seth, I want to come to you now and ask you a question on these booster doses, that at least for the healthcare workers who were administered these vaccines in the first lot between January and March, should there be a provision where we should quickly start administering these vaccines, at least to the healthcare workers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Sanket, there's no doubt. I think Dr. Swaminathan expressed it clearly. We're not talking about boosters for the whole population, but there is no debate around boosters. Booster is with every vaccine and has to come at a particular time. The finesse is trying to time it correctly and for which group at what time. And I think it's very clear. Once we know the roadmap for our vaccination, and we know that at the moment there's surplus vaccination, we have the capacity, and we've created a roadmap for vaccination, there's no point actually staying back and not creating a roadmap for booster. We know how many people need it. We know which category needs it. And we know which time a person would need it. So I think it's very clear. There are three groups that we have to consider. There's no doubt and debate about the fact that there is this double vaccination, which is important in our own country, and that's the focus. But clearly, the ones who've actually got decreased immunity, we call that the third dose and don't even call that a booster. Those people who are on immunosuppressants or anti-cancer therapy, so on and so forth. There's this frontline for healthcare workers, very important group, which will actually take care of the whole population when the third wave comes. And by the way, the third wave is inevitable. And we therefore need to protect healthcare workers who are 10 months past their second doses. And then there's going to be the elderly with comorbid. So we have to create a track. Actually, when we say, when is the time to give booster? The issue is not to whether booster or not. The issue is when's the right time with the data, with the vaccine availability, and with the equity is the right time. And certainly for this three subgroup of people, the time is right now.
No, but then, the reason why I want to ask you this question, Dr. Seth, is that this feasibility study is going to begin now. Now, surely this could have been done a few weeks or a few months earlier.
You know,
all this while we kept saying that, as a government, we kept saying that data suggests that it may not be feasible or it may not necessarily work.
So I think that relates to the whole population. Let's clearly say that we have a great confidence on Antagi, we have a great confidence on NegVac, but clearly this is this group that we're talking about. We're not talking about the whole population. Mm. And when the government has to actually decide, it's a fine balance with vaccine equity, availability, and therefore it's timing issue. Now, I'm sure that the experts are considering this very important issue as to which subgroups come in first.
Correct.
And then the whole population comes in later. So let's not put all that into a single bucket. And correct. Neither is the government saying that. They actually say, where is the policy? And the roadmap needs to be what's there. It is not whether the whole country needs to get a booster, as many of the countries have done.
Fair enough. I think this is very significant, Dr. Trehan. So we basically immediately don't need a mass booster vaccination strategy, but a targeted booster vaccination strategy.
It's true that we have done it before also. The way we started vaccination, we also chose the groups. We went step by step, choosing the most vulnerable, the first, and then the next vulnerable, and the next vulnerable. The urgency right now for healthcare workers is that if that's the army that's going to fight the onslaught, and we don't know what the size and shape of that's going to be, and what burdens, so that army must be fighting fit. If Omicron is living up to its reputation of being transmissibility being 3-4 times that of Delta, then you know that a lot of healthcare workers can go down very quickly. And if that's the case, we will be fighting that battle with in one-legged race. So the basic thing is everybody saying the same thing today, that at least the healthcare workers, the army that's to fight, should be boosted, because we are the ones who got our first shot in January, February. The second shot was in early February. So that's, I think, a major consideration. Now the other part of it, which has not been mentioned, that don't forget, the cost of vaccine is so high today that it's cost over 35,000 crores for the government to be able to reach where we have reached, or maybe more than that. And that in the private space, it has become very expensive. Now, we need to address the issue with the manufacturers, that they had justified the increase in price because of the fact that they had spent money on the development and manufacturing and stuff like that. But it has been amortized over 135 crores now, doses. So now it's time to rethink that it becomes their responsibility also to facilitate that we can join with the government, the private sector, and the government sector can put together, whoever needs it free gets it free, but whoever can pay, but it should be a reasonable amount. And that's the important part to consider today. What is the real cost of this whole program? But nevertheless, whatever it is, cost, the healthcare workers go first, the elderly...
You know, lots of things, for instance. 70%. Dr. Trehan, lots of things. You know, Dr. Pinto, a feasibility study on vaccine cocktails, having more vaccines in the market, which, by the way, is happening. It is all part of the process. But if you want to crush a wave, then these decisions have to be taken swiftly, quickly, and backed with all scientific data. Not rushing through just because, you know, you're supposed to manage someone's expectations. But, you know, the larger point, Dr. Pinto, is also to do, and this is a recommendation coming in from some of those senior doctors, is to, if you want to increase the double dose coverage in this country, double dosed people, then maybe the government may look at reducing the duration between the first and the second dose of Covishield. Do you think this is sound advice?
So I don't honestly think this is sound advice. And, you know, I was just looking at the breakup yesterday. And if you see the individuals getting vaccinated right now, about 3/4 of the individuals getting vaccinated are either receiving their second dose. That's the top category in the 18 to 45 age group. And then the first dose in the 18 to 45 age group. So if you look at risk profiles, this is a relatively lower risk age group. And if I were given an option, I would possibly halt the second doses for these individuals, or even the first doses, boost the vulnerable population, and then get back to these individuals. There is evidence to suggest that a longer duration might even be better. Even if you go beyond 3 months, it might be even better in terms of boosting immunity. And this is a relatively low-risk group. Even data from South Africa suggests that when it comes to Omicron, this is the group that does not seem to get hospitalized, that does not seem to suffer severe disease, and therefore can afford to wait longer for their first or their second dose, while the vulnerable populations and the frontline workers who have now received their first and second doses about 6 to 8 months back, their immunity is clearly waning. And these are, you know, the vulnerable population is a relatively high-risk group for hospitalization. And healthcare workers, for two reasons we need to. Number one, because if all the healthcare workers fall sick simultaneously, we are in trouble. Number two, healthcare workers are constantly exposed to these vulnerable groups. So even if they might have a mild infection, they might transmit it to these vulnerable groups. And therefore, that's not a good idea as well. So if you ask me, I mean, logically to me, it would make more sense to halt the immunization for a month or so for these low-risk categories, boost the high-risk categories and the frontline workers, and then resume vaccination.
Okay, Dr. Seth, very quickly, another important point that was mentioned by a lot of doctors is that while we look at the total percentage of people who may need hospitalization, when you juxtapose that to the total number of infections of the Omicron wave, in percentage terms, it may appear low given the international data. But when you look at the actual numbers, given the size of this country's population, that may put a huge load on the existing healthcare infrastructure.
So,
do you think that's a valid fear?
Well, let me just address that second. And I just want to address also what Dr. Pinto said. I'm not contradicting him. I respect his views. But let's just give you another perspective of actually believing that on the fact that we have to double dose, we actually at the moment have enough vaccine capacity which is being underutilized. So it's not one or the other. While we focus on the double dosing, we have to understand that as we come to the end of double dosing, that's where vaccine second dose hesitancy lies. So I personally feel that the duration needs to be shortened. Here we're saying that you have two doses, that's your best protection. And then when a guy comes in for his first dose, and by the way, I see every day heart patients sitting in front of me, intelligent people who say they haven't even had the first dose. Now you tell me that he comes for his first dose, and you tell him now your second dose is going to be 3 months away. Seems rather foolish when there's enough evidence around for even 6 weeks of dosing. And that's how we as healthcare workers got it. We had it at 4 weeks. So let's assume that we have to shorten it. That's the first step. There's enough vaccine availability. All of us who work in the private sector know that we underutilize to the fact that we actually only working at 40% of our capacity of vaccination when we could actually ramp it up at any point of time. That's the second dose hesitancy. And therefore, the two things have to run in parallel. There's enough vaccine availability. There's enough vaccine capacity manufacturing. SII wants to cut down on vaccination because it's not getting used. And this is the time for a booster. Now, Dr. Trehan expressed it very well. Let's use the private sector capacity for those who can pay to have boosters while the government concentrates on the two-dose strategy. And there's enough corporates which will come as a corporate social responsibility to give this a booster to a lot of the group that we talked about, the special group initially. Now, coming to your point about saying that, sorry, Sanket, your second aspect was related to your question. I knew that I wanted to address that.
Yeah, no, my question was the absolute number of hospitalizations.
Yeah. Let us not assume that it's going to be a mild infection. We pray for a mild infection. Let us hope that it's mild, but let's be prepared for the worst. But let us, even accepting the fact that it's mild, there is going to be the vulnerable population which is going to be really affected. That's done for. Just the vast volumes of the third wave, and third wave is inevitable, could actually really, in percentage terms, even if it's 1-2% of the people who become serious, could actually overwhelm our healthcare system. Hmm. So finally, it does lie on the fact that let us not just believe that we're going to get a mild infection and we're going to survive, so let's not worry about it. If we survive, our parents, our near and dear ones, our susceptible relatives would be affected because we got it and we transferred it to them.
Absolutely.
And lo and behold, let us not pray that this affects them so severely that they get admitted to the hospital, go on a ventilator, and some will die. Some will die irrespective of, even with flu, even with H1, which has become a norm of our lives, people do die.
That's an
and therefore,
point.
We must remember that let us not just be casual about it. I don't want to take solace in the fact that South Africa had mild infections. England is getting inundated with admissions into the hospital.
Very important.
To the same extent.
Very, very important point. All right. Thank you, Dr. Trehan, Dr. Swaminathan, Dr. Seth, as well as Dr. Pinto, for joining us on this first part of the broadcast. And extremely important suggestions being made by you. At this moment, I would also like to introduce Dr. Sangeeta Reddy, Joint Managing Director of the Apollo Hospitals Group. And we also have Kiran Mazumdar Shaw, Executive Chairperson of Biocon India Limited. Dr. Reddy, how worried should we be about Omicron?
So Sanket, I think none of us wanted to be in this situation or in this conversation, but the fact is that we are here. So I would replace the word concerned with how aware, and or say concerned and aware. So we clearly have to understand that this is a virus which has mutated in a manner that makes it very, very contagious. We're looking at an extremely quick spread. We're looking at, you know, various countries across the world now bringing back travel restrictions, bringing down their borders. So it is important for us to be aware of the situation, be aware of the potential. On the bright side of things, India's vaccination numbers continue to grow. And I think with 60% of the adult population fully vaccinated, 89% having got the first dose, on the vaccination front, we are in good stead. It has been found in some studies that the vaccination is taking the edge off, definitely of the known variants, but even Omicron is less virulent to the vaccinated in early studies. So, you know, the push for vaccination must continue. I think that health systems understand what needs to be done. Public understands what needs to be done. So we should be aware. We should move into defensive action immediately so that we mitigate the potential impact of this and be very clear it is coming.
Vishal, let me ask you, what according to you should be the solutions to deal with a possible third wave now that the third wave is inevitable?
So first and foremost, I think, Sanket, we must understand that this is not the last variant. Okay, I think we are going to have many more variants. I think what is important is that we are in a better state of preparedness this time around than we were with the Delta variant. I think we've got much more ammunition to basically deal with the virus, such as vaccines, such as booster doses, such as antivirals and antibody therapies. So I think I feel that we should start feeling a lot more confident of being able to deal with the pandemic than we were in the past. If you remember, we started 2021 on a high note, thinking that, you know, vaccines have arrived and that, you know, the pandemic is receding and I think the worst is behind us. But then we know that we've been in for many, many unexpected shocks, and this is yet another one. So I, for one, believe that we still need to be very, very, focused on COVID-appropriate behavior. I think masking is going to be very important. Obviously, it's not wise to encourage large gatherings. And obviously, it's also important to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And at least the most vulnerable and frontline workers, we ought to come out with a booster policy. More than anything else, Sanket, my real concern is that India is sitting on reams of very, very good data. You know, we are the only country that has collected data in such an organized way at such a scale. For instance, if you look at the COVID app, this has actually collected volumes of data on vaccination. We have the Arogya Setu app, which has collected huge amounts of data on RT-PCR testing. We've got state governments collecting information on sero surveillance. And most recently, we are collecting a lot of genomic sequencing data. How about putting it all together, coming out with analysis and really getting much deeper insights into how this pandemic is actually infecting, how vaccines are helping. And, you know, all this debate that we're having about is Omicron mild or severe can be answered with a lot of this kind of data. Everyone believes that vaccinations are muting the Omicron virus. But do we have enough data to say that, you know? And I think India is sitting on so much data that it would be very good if all these silos of data sets can be integrated, and if we could really come up with some really good research findings, which we could share with the world. Today, we are relying on all these small, small data sets which are being researched by Lancet and CDC and somebody else. Whereas we are sitting on huge amounts of data.
Yes.
So why are we not able to come up with much richer and more extensive research that would give me better comfort than just looking at every day some little report coming out with, 100 patients or 200 patients or 1,000 patients. Here we've got millions of patient data.
I think that's a very, very significant point that Ms. Shaw is making. We have lots of data collected by the government. Let's put it to good use. Now is the time to put it to good use if it's not happening already, and release those results. But Dr. Reddy, Now for the big question. Booster doses. Are we delaying the inevitable?
So, Sanket, I've been, you know, requesting the government to come up with a policy on booster, especially to prioritize the elderly and, you know, the people who are most vulnerable, those with comorbidities, very much like our last approach. But I'm happy to say that 3 days ago, they did say they're going to study it. And I believe this will be a quick study. We look forward to a policy on this fast. It is a scientific approach to say, okay. So, and the good point is if you read between the lines, because I've been tracking this one very closely, and the release from the ministry, from the office of, you know, the health minister, Mansukh Mandavia, they said they're going to study antibodies as well as the T cell. So that means they're doing a really detailed kind of assessment on what is the impact on, you know, post 6 months, post your second dose, what is happening to immunity. If that comes out quickly, we will have a very good policy on booster and we can swing into action, because the good news is that unlike many countries, we don't have a shortage of vaccines in India. So we should play to that advantage and protect as many people as we can.
Now, Mishra, there's a lot of suggestion coming in from across the country by many, many doctors, many experts who say that to increase the spread or the cover of people who are double vaccinated or double dosed, we should actually reduce the gap. Now is the time. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, I certainly believe that people should get their two doses of vaccines, because I think that's going to be extremely important. So whilst we've got almost 90% of the eligible population which has had its first dose, I know that we are just about little short of 50% who are, you know, who've received their second dose. And I think we must basically make sure that at least everyone receives their second dose. And, you know, parallelly, as Sangeeta said, we should get into a prioritized, you know, approach to booster doses, especially with frontline workers, immune-compromised people, and, of course, the elderly. I think we did a great job of rolling out vaccines in the same manner. So we just basically repeat what we've done for the vaccination strategy. You know, we started with frontline workers, then we went on to age-based vaccinations, and, of course, the vulnerable in terms of their disease and immune compromised state. So I think we can do the same thing. We are so used to it. We don't have to, again, reinvent anything. It's there. Just follow those protocols is what I would say. And I think certainly, you know, getting everyone vaccinated is very important, because we've all seen that, you know, many people have been infected, and if they've taken two shots of the vaccines, it's almost as good as having a booster dose. But, you know, getting to measure the antibodies is going to be extremely important, because I think that will actually give you a lot more data on who really needs boosters first.
Because I think antibodies and the T-cell
and T-cells, of course. T-cells, of course, tells you about the severity of the disease. Yeah, but, you know, boosting up antibodies during a surge is always very handy. So I think that's what the approach has been. And I think that's the way we should do it. But I think we do need to be a data-led organization. You know, I keep thinking to myself, India has actually done a great job of managing this pandemic. You know, despite us having these huge challenges during the pandemic, we've still managed to come out right on top because of using data and technology. Let's really keep using data and technology to take the right decisions. I think that's the way we have to lead the world. Otherwise, we are always trying to, you know, have discussions and debates on should we do this, should we have this policy. I mean, it's all out there, you know. So I think we should, and we are a technology-led country now. You know, look at what's happened to healthcare in general. I think we are using technology in a big way. And that's the way India is going to really grow into a knowledge society, a technology-led nation, and so on and so forth. So I'm very excited with the role that technology is playing in pandemic management, and it should go beyond the pandemic into healthcare in general and, of course, other aspects of our economy.
Yes. Thank you very much, Ms. Shaw, as well as Dr. Reddy. I think this is a very important point that you have mentioned on using the data that we have available at our disposal really, really well and not depend on, you know, international studies. Look at them, but create your own and release that data or the study out in the public. Thank you very much. Let me also welcome Professor Lawrence Young. He is a virologist and a professor of molecular oncology at the Warwick Medical School, University of Warwick. Thank you very much, Professor Young. My first question, what information do we have on this new variant? As a virologist, what can you share with us?
Well, we learned it's extremely infectious and spreading at an alarming rate within the UK. We have something like 1 in 45 of our adult population across England is now infected with this Omicron variant. So it is extremely infectious. And we have yesterday again reported the highest levels of infection across the UK that we've ever seen, more than 119,000 cases in 24 hours. So it's really spreading very rapidly.
Now, Professor Young, some early indications suggest, and I'm adding this rider, early indications suggest that this is a milder variant if you compare it with the Delta. Will this be a correct assessment? Because the problem is that this information, if not true, may just lead to a lot of people slackening in their response.
Yes, so the early data coming out, and it's based on relatively low numbers, suggests that fewer people are needing hospital treatment after infection with Omicron compared with other variants. And this is varying levels, but it looks like around 50% less dangerous in terms of severe disease than Delta variant. But all this data is based predominantly on people under the age of 40. These are not older people because the virus has only just started to spread into the older population. And we know that the more severe consequences of coronavirus infection are found in older individuals. And also these individuals don't necessarily respond as well to vaccines. So even though this is good news and it's telling us on the whole that the Omicron variant is milder than Delta, we still think that there are so many people going to be infected that the sheer number of cases will inevitably result in some people getting sick, and that number of people will put significant strain on our healthcare systems in the UK.
Professor Young, my final question, lots of debate around booster shots, many countries questioning its ability to work. In India also, we are assessing whether it should exist or not. In your experience, do boosters work?
Well, all the data coming through suggests that they do work. And of course, one of the problems that we know with the vaccines, current vaccines, is that after a period of time, the protective immune response decays. And so, particularly in the elderly and vulnerable, it's important to top up the body's immune response. We think if you do that with booster shots, early data suggests that gives you probably something like 85% protection from getting infection and developing serious severe disease. So booster shots seem to be very important. And this is something that I think is essential that is rolled out in as many countries as possible.
All right. Thank you very much, Professor Lawrence Young, for joining us. Let me now introduce our big newsmaker, Dr. M. Vidyasagar. He's the head of the National COVID-19 Supermodel Committee. Thank you very much, Professor Vidyasagar. My first question, you think our big worry and concern should be that we still do not have enough information on the Omicron variant?
Yes, so the information is sketchy, but it's not zero. For example, we can look at the rate at which Omicron was spreading in South Africa and compare it against the rate at which the Delta was spreading earlier. So we can say reasonably confidently that Omicron was spreading roughly 2 and 2.2 times faster than Delta. So we can assume the same thing about India. Second thing we can say is that the Omicron variant has already peaked in South Africa somewhere between December 14th to 17th, and the cases have come down quite sharply, whereas the number of hospitalizations haven't really gone up very much, and deaths have stayed really flat. Now, of course, both hospitalizations and deaths are lagging indicators, but in spite of that, we haven't seen any rise in deaths at all. So those are some of the indications we can take away. That's on the positive side. On the negative side, what we don't know is to what extent does the Omicron escape vaccination. So in other words, if you are previously vaccinated, how much protection do you have against the Omicron variants? And the other big unknown is if you have natural immunity from a prior exposure to the Delta variant, how much protection do you have against the Omicron? Just about the only conclusive data we have now is that people who have both, that is, who have been previously exposed and have had both doses of the vaccine, seem to be relatively better protected against the Omicron. This is based on some very fast studies done out of populations in Brazil and in Scotland. So if we extrapolate from that in India, what we conclude is that we have already about 70-75% natural immunity, 85% of the people with one dose of vaccination, and about 60% with two doses. So the imperative would be to make sure that the second dose is administered as quickly as possible to those who have had one dose. So I think, as I said, the situation is not as bleak as one might think, but obviously we could have better details than we have now.
Now, Professor Vidyasagar, as the head of the Supermodel Committee on COVID-19, which is a pretty important task that has been given to you, would you like to tell us what exactly is your mandate, sir?
Right. So the Supermodel Committee was set up in around May or June of last year. And our job was to assess the impact of the first wave and also the impact of the original lockdown, which was imposed in March of 2020. So we did that job and submitted our report somewhere around end of October or early November of 2020. I don't remember exactly. Since then, for all practical purposes, the Supermodel Committee has not met. So it's a little embarrassing for me to be introduced as the head of the Supermodel Committee because the committee has not been active. The work that we are talking about now has been done by just three people who were a subset of that membership: Professor Manindra Agarwal from IIT Kanpur, Lieutenant General Madhuri Kanitkar, who at that time was in the armed forces. Now she has retired and she is the Vice Chancellor of the Maharashtra University of Health Sciences, and myself. So in some sense, we don't have a mandate as such, and we certainly don't have any R&D funding. This is a pro bono effort by the three of us because we want to shed some light on what we think the future course of the pandemic is going to be.
Significant. All right. Professor Vidyasagar, a lot is being said and reported about the reduced number of hospitalization in Omicron, but don't you feel, given the high transmissibility of this variant, the number of people needing hospitalization in absolute terms, not in percentage terms, will be a big worry?
No, I don't believe that, because you see, the forecast that we have made, assuming a kind of a worst case scenario, we have simulated the spread of the disease. This is a projection, it is not a prediction, because we want to know what could happen. So we assume that the Omicron would completely bypass the vaccination, and about 25% of the people who have immunity protection from prior exposure, they would lose that. And with those scenarios, we were looking at a peak load of approximately 1.5 to 1.8 lakhs cases per day. So just to contrast that, the peak load in the second wave was 4 lakhs cases per day. And the reason for that is because when the second wave hit in March, please remember we had not yet started our public vaccination program. Only the frontline workers had been vaccinated. So essentially Delta hit a completely vaccine naive population. Whereas now we have, with second dose, 60% vaccination and protection from prior exposure. So even if we had the same rate of hospitalization with 1.5 to 1.8 lakh cases per day, number of hospitalizations should be less. And as per indications from South Africa, and to some extent from the UK as well, while the number of cases is very high, the number of hospitalization does not seem to be commensurately as high.
All right. Professor Vidyasagar, booster doses. What is the word from you?
Well, I kind of gave the answer in my opening remark, which are that when you get a large number of people with two vaccine doses plus prior exposure to the Delta variant, then you have a very well-protected society. So we have 85% with one dose and 60% approximately with the second dose. So to my mind, the first priority has to be to bring that 60% up to 80-85%. So we should reduce the gap between the first dose and the second dose. That's the reason why this gap exists. So it's not because of vaccine hesitancy. By and large, Indians are not vaccine hesitant. But because the government has mandated 8 to 12 weeks gap between the two doses, that's why we see this disparity. I think the boosters do have a role to play. They have a role to play for people who have had their second dose many, many months ago. For example, the people in the frontline workers, they finished their second dose already by March. Senior citizens like me, we finished our second dose already by April. So that is many, many months ago. So there could be candidates for a booster dose. But for the general public, I think that the emphasis should be on making the second doses making the first doses into second doses. And then only we should start worrying about boosters. The only exception I would make to that statement is if there are people with comorbidities, even amongst the younger population. But a blanket booster, I don't feel it is necessary.
So you do admit that it should be administered to frontline workers and senior citizens. At least that decision must be taken quickly.
Well, part of the reason why, I'm not going to comment on policy because policy is way outside my domain. So let me just speak about the science, okay? So you can say, fine, let's have a booster. So what should be the booster? Should it be more of the same or should be a mix and match? In other words, if you have had two shots of Covishield, is it better to go with Covaxin or a third dose of Covishield? Similarly, if you have had two doses of Covaxin, should you go for Covishield or something else? Now, there's a lot of interesting science there to be done. For example, some people are saying that the DNA-based vaccines, like the Covivax, would make a better booster than either of these two. Now, I'm not competent to comment on that, but those are the kind of studies that some scientists have undertaken. And we should have the results in about a month or so. So once we know which is the best booster strategy, I think that's a good time for the scientific community to start making recommendations. And then, of course, it is up to the government to follow or not as it sees fit. Right now, I would say there isn't that much consensus in the scientific community even as to, yes, we feel there's a booster needed, but which booster, we're still working that out, I would say.
Sure. Now, Professor Vidyasagar, what is your view on the gap between the two doses of Covishield being reduced? Do you feel that the time has come that we do that?
Yeah, definitely. Because you see, if you're going to mandate a large gap between the first dose and second dose, it's axiomatic that you're going to have a large number of people with one dose who are waiting for the second dose. I mean, there's just no way to get around that situation. So if you want to make sure that the one-dose people become two-dose people, and they're all Covishield, because Covaxin has only a 4 to 6 weeks gap. Mm. So if you want to make sure that the one-dose people become two-dose people, the only way is to reduce the gap. And now I think that people have, scientific community has come to the opinion that this is actually a desirable thing.
All right. Professor Vidyasagar, thank you very much for joining us with all your views. Okay, on the Koo app, a lot of comments have come in. Let's see what viewers have to say after watching this program. The first comment, are the booster doses coming anytime soon? Well, we're waiting to hear from the government. The next comment, India is capable enough to fight against the Omicron. Even though India had a lot of limitations in the health sector, we fought well when there was the first and the second wave of COVID. Let's hope that this big fight is won against this latest wave. Good night.